KSDP 830 AM Sandpoint, K201DA King Cove, KFPS Falls Pass.
From New York, this is Democracy Now!
And we're going to be celebrating big on Saturday. We're going to have a lot of... And if there's any protest that wants to come out, they will be met with very big force. By the way, for those people that want to protest, they're going to be met with very big force. And I haven't even heard about a protest. But, you know, this is people that hate our country. But they will be met with very heavy force.
An overnight curfew for downtown Los Angeles has been imposed after days of protest against federal immigration raids. And President Trump has ordered 700 Marines to join thousands of members of the National Guard who've also been deployed to the city. This comes ahead of a major military parade Saturday on Trump's 79th birthday. We'll get an update on nationwide protests planned the same day in thousands of cities and towns called No King's Day. We'll speak with Indivisible co-founder Leah Greenberg and former Marine Jojo Sweat. We'll also look at growing condemnation of President Trump's travel ban, which went into effect Monday in 12 countries.
We have the racist and xenophobic Muslim and travel ban taking effect. And this is an incredible, incredibly un-American policy. This administration spending millions of dollars to score cheap political points.
But first, Israel is continuing to detain eight people after Israeli Navy commandos intercepted a Gaza-bound boat carrying humanitarian aid. Four others on the Gaza Freedom Flotilla have already been deported, including Swedish climate activist Greta Thunberg. We'll get an update from a Spanish activist and crew member who's been deported back to Spain.
It's a violation of our rights. A pirate attack in international waters. Why did they board and seize our ship? We weren't doing anything wrong. We were only carrying symbolic supplies, food, feminine hygiene products, a bit of everything. It wasn't even a ton of cargo because it was a small ship. But I think it was an illegal attack, like they always do since we've been trying to lift the blockade.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Nermeen Sheikh. Protests against immigration raids are growing across the country despite threats by the Trump administration to deploy troops to cities beyond Los Angeles. On Tuesday night, California Governor Gavin Newsom gave a primetime address to decry the Trump administration's decision to send 4,000 National Guard and 700 Marines into the city.
If some of us could be snatched off the streets without a warrant, based only on suspicion or skin color, then none of us are safe. Authoritarian regimes begin by targeting people who are least able to defend themselves, but they do not stop there. California may be first, but it clearly will not end here. Other states are next. Democracy is next. Democracy is under assault before our eyes. This moment we have feared has arrived.
The New York Times reports National Guard troops are accompanying federal immigration officers on raids across Los Angeles. The Marines are also providing security to ICE agents. But Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem has asked Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth to authorize the Marines to make arrests as well. On Tuesday, President Trump spoke at Fort Bragg and compared the protests in Los Angeles to a foreign invasion as fears grow he may soon invoke the Insurrection Act.
What you're witnessing in California is a full-blown assault on peace, on public order, and on national sovereignty carried out by rioters bearing foreign flags with the aim of continuing a foreign invasion of our country.
Officials in California have accused Trump of trying to inflame the situation in Los Angeles. On Tuesday, L.A. Mayor Karen Bass enacted a curfew in part of downtown Los Angeles from 8 p.m. to 6 a.m. Mass arrests were reported. Despite the crackdown, protests continued in L.A. for a fifth day on Tuesday.
This is basic human rights. They're arresting people that are working. They're arresting people at school, at graduation. That's sad, and it's heartbreaking. We don't feel safe. We're standing up for the children that can't stand up for themselves or their parents.
In more news from California, on Tuesday, a U.S. district judge declined California Governor Newsom's emergency request to block Trump from sending in troops. The Pentagon is estimating it will cost $134 million to keep the National Guard and Marines in L.A. for the next 60 days. Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth was questioned Tuesday during a congressional hearing by Democratic Congressmember Betty McCollum.
What training missions aren't happening? Where are you pulling the money from? And how are you planning this in the moving forward?
So we have the funding to cover down on contingencies, especially ones as important as maintaining law and order in a major American city. Right. As far as training, all of the units on the ground have been fully trained in their capabilities of what they're executing on the ground.
During the hearing, Hegseth admitted that he did not know what legal authority Trump was using to deploy troops in L.A. In related news, Texas Governor Greg Abbott has announced plans to deploy the National Guard to San Antonio and other cities as protests against ICE raids grow across Texas and the country. Here in New York, police arrested dozens of protesters Tuesday, including 24 at Trump Tower. Protests were also held in Philadelphia, San Francisco, Boston, Atlanta, Seattle, and other cities Tuesday. Meanwhile, Democratic Congressmember LaMonica McIver of New Jersey has been indicted on federal charges stemming from her arrest outside a Newark Immigration Detention Center where she was conducting an oversight visit. Tanks and other armored vehicles are being transported to Washington, D.C. for a major military parade on June 14th, scheduled to coincide with Donald Trump's 79th birthday and the U.S. Army's 250th anniversary. On Tuesday, President Trump threatened heavy force would be used on anyone who protests at the parade.
And we're going to be celebrating big on Saturday. We're going to have a lot of, and if there's any protester wants to come out, they will be met with very big force. By the way, for those people that want to protest, they're going to be met with very big force. And I haven't even heard about a protest, but, you know, this is people that hate our country, but they will be met with very heavy force.
This comes as protests against Trump's embrace of authoritarianism are being planned for Saturday in more than 1,500 cities. The protests are being organized under the banner of No Kings. We'll have more on the protests later in the program. Officials in Gaza have accused Israeli forces of killing at least 31 more Palestinians who were attempting to collect aid at a food distribution site south of Gaza City. A spokesperson for Gaza's civil defense said 200 people were also wounded as Israeli forces attacked the crowd with tanks and drones in the latest massacre on aid seekers. Britain, Norway, Canada, Australia, and New Zealand have imposed sanctions on Israeli Finance Minister Bezalel Smotrich and National Security Minister Itamar Ben-Gvir, two far-right members of Benjamin Netanyahu's government. British Foreign Secretary David Lammy spoke on Tuesday.
Well, these two individuals, Ben-Gvir and Smotrich, have been inciting violence against Palestinian people for months and months and months. They have been encouraging egregious abuses of human rights.
Israel and the Trump administration denounced the sanctions on Ben-Gvir and Smotrich, which were announced as the Israeli military conducted its largest raid in years on the West Bank city of Nablus. In related news, the U.S. ambassador to Israel, Mike Huckabee, has said the U.S. no longer backs an independent Palestinian state in the West Bank. Instead, Huckabee suggested Palestinians could form a state elsewhere if other Muslim nations donated land. Israel is continuing to hold eight individuals who were detained Monday when Israeli Navy commandos intercepted a Gaza-bound boat carrying humanitarian aid. Four other passengers on the Gaza Freedom Flotilla have already been deported, including Swedish climate activist Greta Thunberg, who spoke to reporters Tuesday after being flown to Paris on her way back home to Sweden.
They did an illegal act by kidnapping us on international waters and against our will, bringing us to Israel, keeping us in the bottom of the boat, not letting us getting out and so on. But that is not the real story here. The real story is that there is a genocide going on in Gaza and a systematic starvation following the siege and blockade now, which is leading to food, medicine, water that are desperately needed to get into Gaza is prevented from doing so.
Protests erupted in Argentina Tuesday after the country's Supreme Court upheld a 6-year prison sentence for former President Cristina Kirchner, who has also been barred from seeking public office following a controversial corruption conviction. Kirchner was a populist leader who was known to be a champion of the poor. She criticized the ruling and the austerity policy of Argentine President Javier Milei.
I think they are wrong because they can put in jail, but people will still receive miserable salaries or lose their jobs. They can put me in jail, but pensions will continue to be insufficient and people will not make ends meet. They can put me in jail, but medicines are more and more expensive and inaccessible, not only for retirees, but for anyone. They can put me in jail, but parents will continue to believe that their children have the right to eat 4 meals a day. They can do all that, and still it will not do them any good. It will take more or less time.
In news from Haiti, the number of internally displaced people has reached a record 1.3 million. The International Organization for Migration says the figure has jumped 24% since December due to escalating violence. This comes as President Trump has placed a travel ban on Haiti and 11 other countries. We'll have more on Haiti and the travel ban later in the show. In media news, ABC News is parting ways with longtime correspondent Terry Moran just days after he harshly criticized Trump advisor Stephen Miller in an online post. Moran had written in part, quote, "Miller is a man who is richly endowed with the capacity for hatred. He's a world-class hater." The news comes 6 months after ABC agreed to pay $15 million to Trump to settle a defamation lawsuit. In New Jersey, four-term Congresswoman Mickey Sherrill has won the Democratic gubernatorial primary. Newark Mayor Ras Baraka placed second in the six-way race. Jack Cetarelli won the Republican primary. He's been endorsed by President Trump. And Secretary of State Marco Rubio has ordered the termination of all remaining overseas employees of USAID to complete the dismantling of the six-decade-old agency. USAID was an early target of Elon Musk and DOGE, the Department of Government Efficiency. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Nermeen Sheikh in New York, joined by Amy Goodman in Salt Lake City, Utah. Hi, Amy.
Hi, Nermeen, and hello to all our viewers, listeners, and readers around the country and around the world. I am joining you from Salt Lake City, Utah, from Spy Hop Youth Media Arts Center, where we're participating in the annual conference, the 50th anniversary of the National Federation of Community Broadcasters. Yes, this is Democracy Now!. An overnight curfew for downtown Los Angeles has been announced by Mayor Karen Bass following days of protest against federal immigration raids. Mayor Bass cited vandalism and looting of local businesses as the reason for the curfew. President Trump's ordered the deployment of 700 Marines who will be arriving in Los Angeles today to join thousands of members of the National Guard who've also been deployed to the city. Speaking at Fort Bragg in North Carolina, President Trump criticized the California governor and Los Angeles mayor who opposed the deployments. Some of the troops in the audience booed at the mention of their names.
In Los Angeles, the governor of California, the mayor of Los Angeles, they're incompetent, and they paid troublemakers, agitators, and insurrectionists. They're engaged in this willful attempt to nullify federal law and aid the occupation of the city by criminal invaders. That's what it is. They're invaders, no different.
Protests against militarized immigration enforcement have spread to other cities like New York, Chicago, and Atlanta. This weekend, on Saturday, under the banner of No King's Day, at least 18,000 rallies have been organized nationwide, more and more joining every day. This coincides with a major military parade that will be taking place in the Capitol. tanks and other armored vehicles are being transported to Washington, D.C. for the parade on June 14th, which is Donald Trump's 79th birthday and the U.S. Army's 25th anniversary. On Tuesday, President Trump threatened heavy force would be used against anyone who protests at the parade.
And we're going to be celebrating big on Saturday. We're going to have a lot of, and if there's any protest that wants to come out, they will be met with very big force. By the way, for those people that want to protest, they're going to be met with very big force. And I haven't even heard about a protest, but, you know, this is people that hate our country, but they will be met with very heavy force.
Protest organizers are encouraging participants to go to Philadelphia instead of Washington, D.C. For more on the latest news, the troop deployments and the planned rallies this weekend, we're joined by two guests. Leah Greenberg is co-founder and co-executive director of Indivisible. The group is organizing the No King's Day protests on June 14th. And Jojo Sweat, a former Marine and the organizing director for the veterans group Common Defense, who will also be taking part in the No King's Day protests planned in over 1,800 cities. We welcome you both to Democracy Now! Leah Greenberg, if you could begin by explaining your group, Indivisible, is organizing this protest, these mass protests across the country. Explain why.
Well, when we heard and got the news that Donald Trump was planning this military parade, we understood it as part of a broader effort to project power, to chill dissent, to cement authoritarian control around this country, right? This is not just a parade. It's part of a bigger campaign that is involved attacking state government, or attacking the power of states, attacking civil society, going after labor leaders like David Huerta, the president of SEIU in California, who was arrested while peacefully protesting ICE detentions or ICE kidnappings. What we're seeing is a wholesale effort to assert dominance and power from sending troops into LA completely unnecessarily to and illegally to having this military parade in DC for his birthday. And so what we feel like in this moment is really important is for folks to understand he may have his fascist theatrics in DC, but real power comes from people everywhere all over the country. And so that's why we called for the No Kings protests. And what we've seen, we've got over 1900 protests now all over the country. We are seeing a skyrocketing number of people who are showing up, who are asking what can I do, who are horrified by what is happening in LA and who want to stand up. And what we're going to show him on June 14th is that real power lies in the people, lies in the consent of the governed, not in a pageant for your birthday in Washington, D.C.
I wanted to bring Jojo Sweat into this conversation, former Marine with the group Common Defense right now. First, I wanted to get your response to Marines being deployed to the streets of Los Angeles. At this point, what, 700 of them, though President Trump has now said that National Guard and Marines will be deployed around the country. And also get your response as a former Marine to what we're calling this parade, but in fact, it's more than two dozen M1 Abrams tanks, each weighing more than 60 tons. This is why it's costing something like tens of millions of dollars, this parade in Washington, to shore up the streets. The question is if they will be damaged by this heavy military hardware. They're going to be going down Constitution Avenue near the White House in a procession that until recently was not part of the 250th anniversary of the Army's programming, accompanied by scores of infantry, fighting vehicles, heavy artillery weaponry, plus some 6,600 soldiers as helicopters fly overhead. So if you could talk first about the Marine deployment as a former Marine, and then about this massive show of force that people usually identify with heavily militarized societies like, military parades in North Korea.
First, thank you for having me. And related to Marines and National Guard being deployed to LA, I think it's obviously a terrible idea, especially because it is not the idea of the leadership of the state to invite them to be there. Now, the National Guard has has a function and works well within the states that it supports. But by the call and guidance of the governor there in the state, which hasn't been completed. And so it's kind of an overstretch for the president of the United States to be involved in states' affairs in that way when not requested. The other factor about the Marine Corps is that that is not the purpose of our Marine Corps. That is not why the Marine Corps exists. And when I was a Marine, if I wasn't in a combat or war scenario, then I was in a humanitarian scenario. And that's when we're, you know, fixing everything that we've destroyed and trying to rebuild, not things that we would want to do on U.S. soil. And does it make me feel good that it's the president of the United States that is requesting this type of armed reaction on its citizens, that is citizens that are actually practicing their rights that they have here in the United States? As far as the parade, it's an egregious overspend. It is a showing of his ego. It is also his birthday. It is not just the Army's 250th year of service. It's actually the Marine Corps' birthday later on this year. So we don't have these individual parades or support of parades by the military to the president like you've seen in North Korea. We just went through two crazy quarters of this new administration with them giving us DOGE and on the pretense that we need to save money as a country and that we're broke. And so to say those things and enact a DOGE and talk about cutting 83,000 jobs at the VA and Medicare and care for everyday Americans, but then to host this parade in Washington, D.C., where there's not even really roads to support this, we're spending an egregious amount of money. And for what? A birthday celebration that is completely unnecessary.
If you could talk more about the amount of money, for example, the $45 million. It started at $20 million, but now it's gone up, as you point out, then yet thousands of jobs have been lost through DOGE. If you could talk about the health care and cuts to veterans' health care.
Yeah, these cuts to veterans' healthcare are already showing up, actually, especially in rural communities or with veterans that are using specialty services specifically for cancer treatment. We're talking to those veterans already who are being affected, who are being denied care, who have lost their psychiatrists, their therapists on staff. And so turning around and spending that money in the face of America for a parade for a president does not seem like you really care. And we were in DC just the first week of May, trying to interface and speak with Secretary Doug Collins. And in fact, he actually ran from us when we asked him the question about cutting 83,000 jobs and then having a parade for the president. But a lot of these representatives don't want to answer those questions, or they want to relate it to recruiting. And I don't think that this is what recruiting dollars should be spent on.
Is working on is that of Black veteran Marlon Parris from Trinidad and Tobago, who was detained in Phoenix, Arizona, just days after Trump's inauguration in January. This is his wife, Tanisha Hartwell Parris.
I am having to visit my husband through a glass window. And I do not know when he's coming home.
So could you tell us more about the case?
Yeah, I'm really close with the Parris family in Arizona. As you reported, Marlon was picked up several days after the Trump administration took office and after their immigration policies went into play. Although Marlon Parris had committed a crime, he served his sentence. He left that system and became a viable member of our society. You know, once he had adequate treatment, once he got access to his VA services after being deployed to war several times, and I want to stress that his crime was a nonviolent crime. The minute Trump became in office, Marlon Parris was leaving his home in his neighborhood in Phoenix, Arizona, to go to work, and was just randomly targeted, picked up, and detained, and has been detained since January 22nd. His court date continues to be pushed out so that we can try to mitigate whatever is happening with his paperwork that's causing all of this. There are been many missteps that have happened within his immigration process, but one thing that we know for sure is that he has a letter of no interest, which is a letter that you get when any situation comes up in your life where you're eligible for deportation. So he got that no interest letter at the end of his court case and serving his time. In addition to that, his green card was renewed after that in 2017, and it's not even set to expire until 2027. But there was an error when he was coming back from vacation into the United States in 2023, I believe, and they confiscated his green card. And he's been trying to reobtain his green card through legal representation since that happened. He was allowed reentry into the country, but they took away his documents. And in the fight to try to get those back, suddenly this man has been detained under the new administration, and we haven't been able to rectify the situation. And he's currently detained in Florence, and our next court date is in August.
So if you could explain more fully, Jojo, about the number of people who go into the military hoping it will help them become U.S. citizens, and yet seeing that people are being deported after they have served in the U.S. military.
Yeah, it's thousands. I was actually a recruiter during the time that we were recruiting for the Forever Wars when I came back from that war. And so I was a recruiter in Denver, Colorado, from late 2003 to 2006. We were giving away at that time, which was totally unprecedented for the Marine Corps, a two-year contract to join the United States military because we were in an active war. And what that means is that instead of serving 4 years and then 4 years in the IRR, you would do 2 years on active duty and have 6 years on the IRR. And many talking points when we were selling that program to join the United States military was talking about a pathway to citizenship. As a recruiter and somebody who used to have to compile all the documents of anybody that I needed to enter into the Marine Corps and send to the MEPS, it floored me to discover that after the MEPS and medical process and verifying who you are as a person of entry into the service, generally the buck stops there. And it becomes then the onus of the service member to find the way for that pathway to citizenship. And if they do, and they have a good command that helps set them up to do the paperwork, they may get several appointments that are scheduled in future time. And then when that service member deploys or gets reassigned, that is the farthest thing from their mind, because in their mind, they're thinking, well, I joined the service with a pathway to citizenship. They have all my documents. They know everything about me. They must be taking care of it. When in fact, the United States military has no impact or no design on helping you actually get that citizenship. So unfortunately, a lot of people leave the service thinking, oh, I'm a U.S. citizen because I served in the United States military and I have this beautiful document called the DD-214. And when in fact, that is not the case. And when they find themselves in a situation that makes them eligible for deportation, that is generally when they find out that they are eligible for deportation and are not a U.S. citizen.
So, Leah Greenberg, let's go back to the resistance to Trump, what Trump is doing, the protests that you have planned across the country, the No King's Day protests. I mean, in this case, the military parade that's happening on Saturday is one he wanted to have during his first term, inspired in 2017 by the Bastille Day parade that he witnessed in France. But at the time, D.C. officials and the military resisted, with Defense Secretary at the time, Jim Mattis, reportedly saying that he would rather, quote, swallow acid. So if you could talk about what you see as greater capitulation now to Trump among government and military officials.
I think you're speaking to a phenomenon that we're seeing across all facets of society, which is that in 2017, there was a resistance to Trump from a bunch of different places, right? Everyone from federal employees to members of his own party, sometimes to state and city governments, to business, media, corporations, higher education. Folks pushed back and held up like whatever little corner of the norms of liberal democracy that they were supposed to hold up. And what we've seen this time around that I think has been one of the dominant themes of the last 6 months has been just an enormous degree of people obeying in advance, people treating Trump as the new normal and trying to, you know, go along to comply to secure their own safety and position in under this would-be dictator. And this is what we talk about when we talk about this internally. We talk about the aura of inevitability, the idea that, you know, this guy is in power. He's going to stay in power. You just got to make your peace with it and figure out how to secure your own safety. And I think that's what we've seen across a bunch of facets of society, and part of how we get something like a military parade, which is that anybody in the military who was prepared to tell Donald Trump this is a bad idea is saying no, that DC government is in a fundamentally different posture than it was in 2017. And, you know, it's just part of a broader phenomenon, right? California does not want the National Guard. Nobody in DC wants the wants a military parade. The only person who wants all of these theatrics, all of these authoritarian tactics, these militarized crackdowns on our communities, the only person who wants, or the person who wants this is Donald Trump. And so fundamentally, we've got to collectively generate the pushback that kicks other parts of society, the other people who are responsible for pushing back wherever they are, back into gear. We've got to, by showing up in large numbers, generate the conditions for courage that let other people push back too.
So finally, Leah Greenberg, if you can talk about No King's Day. I mean, before I said 18,000, but I think the number is 1,800 cities and towns and villages and counting. But how you're organizing, and also your decision not to hold a major protest in Washington, D.C. on Saturday, as Trump threatens to use heavy military force against protesters, but how the organizing is taking place.
Yeah, that's right. Well, look, Indivisible is a movement of regular people. We are working with partners and an extraordinary coalition across the entire pro-democracy coalition, from veterans groups like our friends at Common Defense, labor unions, civil rights organizations, immigrant rights groups, faith leaders. We really want to pull in as many people as possible into this collective moment of peaceful defiance of a would-be dictator. Now, these events are organized by people in your community, right? They are overwhelmingly volunteers who are putting them together in order to create a community space for us to push back. There are, as you said, there are actually 1,900 on the map as of this morning, and it continues to rise. We anticipate hitting over 2,000 events around the country by the end of today. If you are pretty much anywhere, wherever you are, and you are probably about less than 30 minutes away from your closest No Kings event, they have incredible coverage, including in really red areas where you might not expect there to be resistance. That what we're finding is that this is everywhere. So if you are interested, you can go to nokings.org and you can look on our map and find the event that is closest to you. If there is not an event that is close to you, there is still time to organize one yourself, pull together a few folks in your community, and collectively say, we're here to declare No Kings, stop the raids, stand together as communities, and reclaim our democracy.
Thank you so much, Leah Greenberg of Indivisible, and JoJo Sweat, former Marine and Common Defense. Coming up, we'll also look at growing condemnation of President Trump's travel ban, which went into effect Monday in 12 countries. Stay with us. Let
इस शहर में, इस शहर में वो कोई प्यार नहीं, इस शहर में oh, ain't no love in the heart of the city. In the heart of town, ain't no love, and it sure is a pity. Ain't no love since you ain't around. Oh, since you've been around.
Ain't No Love in the Heart of the City, rendition of Zeeshan B in our Democracy Now! Studio. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Nermeen Sheikh in New York.
And I'm Amy Goodman in Salt Lake City, Utah. We're looking now at the growing condemnation of President Trump's travel ban, which went into effect Monday, banning citizens of 12 countries from entering the United States. Afghanistan, Burma, Chad, Equatorial Guinea, Eritrea, Haiti, Iran, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, Yemen, and the Republic of Congo, not to be confused with the Democratic Republic of the Congo. It also imposes heightened restrictions on people from Burundi, Cuba, Laos, Sierra Leone, Togo, Turkmenistan, and Venezuela who are outside the U.S. and don't hold a valid visa. Washington State Attorney General Nick Brown said he may challenge the ban with what he called a hostile Supreme Court. Brown spoke Sunday with Washington State Representative Daria Farivar, the state's first elected Middle Eastern politician, first Iranian-American woman elected to the Washington State Legislature.
This ban will hurt people, real people. It will tear families apart at life's most sacred moments, keep loved ones from mourning, celebrating, and holding each other close in their final moments. It'll steal opportunities from brilliant students who deserve a future. It promises 4 more years of separation, 4 more years of sorrow, and we cannot allow this.
The president's order is clearly unfair, discriminatory, and will impact millions and millions of people who pose no risk whatsoever to our country. And when we couple this travel ban with everything else that we are seeing in this country at this moment, including the president's violent escalation of events in California this week, we know what we are seeing from the president of the United States of America is creeping authoritarianism.
This follows Trump's first travel ban in 2017. Immigrant rights groups have been organizing as the ban takes effect this week, including two organizers who join us now. In New York, Gerline Joseph is co-founder and executive director of Haitian Bridge Alliance, and Murad Awouda is president and CEO of the New York Immigration Coalition, usually based in New York City and today in Montgomery, Alabama. Welcome to both of you to Democracy Now! Gerline, let's begin with you. Haiti is one of the countries included in this travel ban. So if you could talk about the impact of that on Haiti, which is dependent not only so much on aid, international aid, but also on remittances from Haitians working in the U.S.
Thank you so much for having me. And the reality is what we are seeing right now with the travel ban targeting countries like Haiti. And for those who don't know, Haiti is literally 90 minutes away from Miami. And instead of addressing the root causes of the issues in Haiti that are in part caused by U.S. foreign policy towards Haiti, and also looking into how the guns and the money and the ammunition is being funneled through Haiti to continue to destabilize the country, we are punishing Haiti for what is going on right now, and the attack on Haiti and the multiple other countries, majority black and Muslim countries, are a clear example of why we continue and we must fight to make sure that people have the right to migrate. And the current ban literally separating families. I spoke to three people as we got the announcement, and two of them were supposed to go visit family in Canada. And they are stuck. They are afraid to leave, not being able to come back to continue their lives and their studies in the United States because they are Haitian passport holders. What will that mean when they try to leave or we enter the country? Will have a big impact on how the community continues to move forward.
So do you know, Geraldine, why Haiti was put on this list? And also, our news from the top of the show, the number of internally displaced people has reached a record 1.3 million in Haiti. The International Organization for Migration saying the figures jumped almost 25% since December due to the escalating violence. The kind of impact this total ban will have.
Thank you, Amy. They are saying that people from Haiti tend to overstay their visas. And I want to clarify a couple of things. For the past almost 3 years, the consular section of the U.S. Embassy in Haiti has been closed. There is no way for someone in Haiti to be able to access to get a visa. They have to go to a third country to even be able to apply and get the visa if you are a Haitian national. As you mentioned, 1.3 million people who are completely displaced within the country. And at the same time, we are hearing that there might be a deportation flight to Haiti within the next few days. We are looking into how that will continue in the destabilization of the country, but at the same time, how that impact people here in the U.S. and around the world with the trauma and the terror that we continue to see impacting people, unable to go to work. I went to church on Sunday. About one-third of the people were afraid to come to church. We are seeing empty churches, empty workplaces. We are seeing the impact of this Trump travel ban and other immigration policies completely destroying communities that are vulnerable, and we must be able to push back. So it is imperative that people understand what's happening, and we continue to say that they are using immigration as a scapegoat to be able to dismantle every fabric of who we are as a country, from DEI to women issues to LGBTQ. Happy Pride Days to those who are celebrating, and the erasure of African American history. So they are using immigration and immigrant communities as a scapegoat to continue to divide and conquer. And we are seeing that they have had a lot of practice, but we are here pushing back, fighting on behalf of those communities, and making sure that they are protected. From California in San Diego to Los Angeles.
I want to bring Murad Awada into the conversation with the New York Immigration Coalition, though today he happens to be in Montgomery. And Murad, I think that's interesting you're in Montgomery, because you have President Trump calling out the National Guard, federalizing it in Los Angeles. The last time this happened, I mean, it hasn't happened in 60 years, was in the civil rights era, was to guarantee that the Selma to Montgomery march of civil rights workers led by Dr. Martin Luther King and John Lewis would be able to march. That was against the governor at the time. And President Trump now, 60 years later, not because of civil rights issues, but actually against civil rights issues, is making this move. But I wanted to ask you about this ban. In 2017, we were talking about a Muslim ban. This ban of all, absolute ban on this series of countries and partial ban on others, the impact this has.
The impact that this has on U.S. citizens is going to be immense. This means that people who have family abroad who are in the process of actually trying to do the paperwork to get their family to come visit them, you know, to share the life celebrations that we all love, or when we need to say our farewells to family members who passed, will not be possible anymore. This is going to rip families apart. This is going to continue to double and triple down on the terror that this administration is waging against immigrant communities across the board. And what we need to do is, as my sister Gerlene mentioned earlier, is actually stand up and continue to fight back against this. The Trump administration is trying to see how far they can take all that they're doing to ensure that they can really use immigrant communities as a test case. And I often say this, if some of us don't have rights in this country, none of us do. This is a call to all Americans to start standing up and fighting back. This is going to be the test case. So there's always a route that the administration continues to try to find. There was reports yesterday on MSNBC that what they're doing in LA, which is horrifying to immigrant communities, but also to Americans, is going to be spread across the country and targeting US cities like New York City and other blue cities across the country.
And Murad, I just want to, because Gerlene mentioned that one of the reasons, justifications given by the Trump administration for imposing the travel ban on certain countries was people who overstayed their visas. Now, Chad is an example of a country that's been banned where almost 50% of people overstay. Spain, for instance, only 2.4% overstay. But the absolute numbers, there's an exponential difference. So in the case 2023 to 2024, the 50% overrate stay from a Chad amounted to 377 people, as against 20,000 people from Spain. So if you could comment on what you think, and we have a minute left, on what the real justification for this ban, the countries that were selected, and then the New York for All Act that you're advocating.
So the Trump administration doesn't need any help in trying to come up with frivolous excuses. That's all this is. They are looking for excuses to say that this is why they're doing this. And they don't need to try to sugarcoat things anymore, because we already know who they are. And we've known who they are. They are an administration that is gung-ho on destroying what this nation stands for. Immigration and the US is an American value. Like, I don't know how much more to explain this, but their excuses continue to fly in the face of facts. And what we're doing right now across the state of New York is fighting for the New York for All Act, which would prohibit state collusion with immigration enforcement. We have a few days left in the state legislature, and we're urging the New York State Senate and the New York State Assembly, as well as Governor Hochul, to really stand up and protect our communities. We need to ensure that we are doing everything that we can to protect New Yorkers. New York for All Act is a public safety measure. We want to keep all New Yorkers safe, and we can't do that if we don't have the laws in place to do it. So we're calling on our state legislature to have the courage to stand up and to fight back with us by passing the New York for All Act today.
Murad Abdouda, New York Immigration Coalition, thanks so much for joining us. And Gerlene Joseph here in New York of the Haitian Bridge Alliance. Coming up, Israel is continuing to detain 8 people after Israeli Navy commandos intercepted a Gaza-bound boat carrying humanitarian aid. 4 others on the Gaza Freedom Flotilla have already been deported. We'll get an update from a Spanish crew member who's been deported back to Spain. So.
Ni ma fe ni wolo ni wi bofu safu.
Bofu Safu by Amadou and Mariam, performing in our Democracy Now! Studio. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Nermeen Sheikh in New York.
And I'm Amy Goodman in Salt Lake City, here for the 50th anniversary of the National Federation of Community Broadcasters. Hundreds of heads of community radio stations have gathered to talk about the importance of independent media. But we're moving on to what's happened on the high seas. Officials in Gaza have accused Israeli forces of killing at least 31 more Palestinians who are attempting to collect aid at a food distribution site south of Gaza City. A spokesperson for Gaza's civil defense said 200 people were also wounded as Israeli forces attacked the crowd with tanks and drones in the latest massacre of aid seekers. This comes as Israel's continuing to detain eight people who were detained Monday when Israeli Navy commandos intercepted a Gaza-bound boat carrying humanitarian aid on the high seas. Four others on the Gaza Freedom Flotilla have already been deported, including Greta Thunberg, who's made her way back to Sweden, the famous climate activist. Dr. Baptiste André, a French doctor who was on board the Madeleine, is now back in France. And Greta Thunberg, before going to Sweden, was deported to Paris, where she spoke to reporters.
They did an illegal act by kidnapping us on international waters and against our will, bringing us to Israel, keeping us in the bottom of the boat, not letting us getting out and so on. But that is not the real story here. The real story is that there is a genocide going on in Gaza and a systematic starvation following the siege and blockade now, which is leading to food, medicine, water that are desperately needed to get into Gaza is prevented from doing so.
Some Gaza flotilla crew members now reportedly face a 100-year entry ban. For more, we're joined in Lorona, Spain, by Sergio Toribio, a Spanish activist with the Freedom Flotilla Coalition, who was one of the 12 on board the Madeleine flotilla to Gaza, delivering humanitarian aid, and has just been deported back to his home country of Spain. Welcome to Democracy Now!, Sergio Toribio. Describe to us what happened when the Madeleine flotilla was intercepted by Israeli forces in the middle of the night in international waters.
We have this this night watch between 12 and 4, and around 1 in the morning we have the visit of two fast boats that they didn't give any radio instruction or they say anything, you know, to us. They just crossed by us, you know, like trying to intercept us, but nothing else. They left, we raised the alarm. Because we've been trained for that, no? We were training the last days. Only we have some case of attack, no? The thing is, they left. They didn't say anything on the radio. And in by 10, 15 minutes, we have a visit of a drone, a close-range drone. This drone was trained to come very close to the ship, and he get hit one of the wires of the mast, and he left on the water. So, like 2 minutes later, we got another two big drones, one with a very powerful light, and the other was throwing over us, over the whole ship, over the cabin, over us, like a white paste. You know, we didn't even know what is still yet. So we get close inside the cabin, the cabinet with our life rags, ready to get assaulted, because we trained, as I said. And in like half an hour after throwing this seed, this paste of kind of fine that when you touch it or get in contact with it, it gets black and very slippery, you know, for example, in the floors of the deck. So at the end of this attack, two fast boats approaches us by starboard and port side. And then they give us a message in English through the speakers, like they were about to embark us, they were not to harm us, they were trying to keep a bit lower the nerves, no? Raising hands, be quiet, So at the end, they boarded us like 12 well-armed with M4, shotguns, guns, knives, you know, covered up to the eyes, more than 12 soldiers. You know, they get us like closed in the cabin. We've been like master station, and they move it one per one. They move it on the bow of the ship. They ask us, they register us. And when they gather the 12, the medic of this command, they come to us to ask for some medical condition or if for someone was injured. They offered some water, they offered some food, and they keep us in the deck of the boat for around 15 hours until like 12 in the morning, something like that, between 12 and 2, because I didn't have a clock. It was when the sun started to really get warm to us. They moved us inside the ship, and they keep it under the decks like for another 10 hours, 12 hours, until we reach Tel Aviv Harbor.
And so, Sergio, tell us what happened then. If you can explain what happened when you were first brought into Ashdod, and then why four of you were deported, you, Greta Thunberg, and two others, and others remain there in Israel.
Yeah. The thing is, after the army give the command to us from the ship to land to the police, to the Israeli police, and they registered us again, they passed us the dogs. I guess that is normal procedures, and they put us in tables with another agents trying to get us to sign this. We tried to enter in a military zone, but we've been at more than 100 miles in international waters. That cannot be possible that it was a military zone, as they said. So I guess they kidnapped us, you know. They forced us out. When our destiny was
and
clear.
And can you say Sergio, can you say why you went on this ship? Why you were part of the Freedom Flotilla Coalition named for Gazan fisherwoman, the first Gazan fisherwoman?
Yeah. I get this because I am an activist, and I thought that Palestinian people deserve that we put in the whole world, no? What is happening there, that is a genocide. So for me, it's like I have the chance to join the flotilla, and I decide to help them in the way I can, no matter how.
And Sergio, you've said that you would do this all over again. If you could talk about that.
Yes. I'm trying to get in this march from Egypt, from El Cairo. But the thing is, it's very short time. I have a window very short. So I don't think it's going to be possible this time. But of course, I'm an activist. And I'm, you know, for the last 11 years, I've been in marine protection. I've been rescuing people in the Mediterranean for 2 years and a half. And now I have this chance to join the flotilla and to join any kind of Gaza, pro-Gaza movement, you know, for help Palestinian and for help, for fight against this it's a genocide, you know.
And Sergio, can you tell us, since you've returned to Spain, what kind of reception have you received?
The first for me was the diplomatic on Gaza's migration center in the airport on Tel Aviv. It was our consul there and our vice consul. That was super nice to see how they behave and how to see they've been worried, of course, about what happened. You know, because we didn't make anything wrong, and we didn't try to enter any kind of military zone. We've been in the international waters trying to deliver some food, like symbolic, because my mission was to break the siege they are having illegally against these people, the Palestinian people, and in Gaza. It was very nice and very warm to have also all the media teams waiting in Barcelona. A friend I didn't know that was also waiting for me there, you know, from the Gaza movement, from this flotilla coalition. And of course, when I reached Logroño, that is my home, you can imagine my mom and my sister were there, that they were very, very worried about.
And do you see, Sergio, do you imagine more people joining the next time there is such a flotilla from other places in the world? You just have 30 seconds.
I'm pretty sure that this is going to happen, you know, because now more and more people is knowing what is happening. And not only, you know, we are a lot of different countries working on it. You know, it's not only the countries we've been in this flotilla, because it happened in other flotillas, and they attacked this.
I'm afraid we're going to have to leave it there, Sergio. Sergio Toribio is a Spanish activist and member of the Freedom Flotilla Coalition. Special thanks to the team at Skyhop Youth Media Arts Center, Larissa Trout, Don Barfus.